there, it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Hello, how are you? It's Tracy Tully here from Tracy Tully Talks and welcome to our show today. We have a guest speaker who is a very, very informative person in her field. Her name is Dr. Jo Lukens, and Jo will be joining us shortly. Jo comes from Townsville in far north Queensland, and she is a speaker, a psychologist, a presenter, and an author. And whilst we're waiting for Jo to come and join us, I just want to tell you a little bit about her. She has a fabulous book that's out, and it's called The Elite, Think Like an Athlete, Succeed Like a Champion. It really is a fabulous book to read and to understand the psychology of thinking like a champion athlete. One of the famous things about this book is that the foreword is written by one of our famous footy players, Jonathan Thurston. So Joe says, have you ever wondered how to gain that extra edge? Perhaps you know your stuff, but just need something more to help you reach your potential. Or maybe you've watched the achievements of others and you've thought, that should be me. I wonder how many people out there today really, really wish they could strive more at their chosen field, or even more so, their chosen sporting area. I wonder if that's you, if you're the sort of person that wants to get more out of your sport, whether it's a professional sport or not, it doesn't matter. Dr. Jo is the person that will be telling us how you can go about it. So athletes who reach the pinnacle of their sport have found the mental edge that sets them apart from everyone else. And that edge is well within your reach. Dr. Jo Lukens has been a psychologist for over 25 years, and she's helped individuals, teams, and organizations achieve success at the highest level. She's a regular speaking to athletes, and not just our sporting athletes, but also our Army and Defence Force personnel. So Jo has worked for many years in that area as well. So in her book, she reveals 10 key secrets that enable elite performers to master their craft. And how does she do that? She teaches you how to increase your confidence, change the way you do sport and business, and live the life that you deserve. No longer is success only for the exclusive few. For Jo, she can help you lift your game. So in this book, it's on Amazon. You might like to look at it and look for it. It's a great little read by Dr. Jo Lukens. And while we're waiting for Jo to come on board, I'm going to talk to you about some of the areas that are of great interest for us at this point in time. And obviously with COVID, education is a big area of interest. That being because we have had homeschooling in our universe. And for those mums who've homeschooled and dads who've homeschooled and grandparents who have homeschooled their children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews or even friends' kids, this has been an enormous adjustment for a household. So we're going to talk to a couple of people over the next few weeks about their experience in homeschooling. So what is one of the things that have worried a lot of people? You can imagine if you have never been in a classroom and you haven't experienced what it's like to teach, that the thought of homeschooling your children all of a sudden would be quite daunting, and especially if you have more than one child. Now, our guest Dee Stearman was going to join us today, but Dee has had an emergency situation she's had to leave and go to, and so the lovely Dr. Jo Lucan is stepping up shortly. But in the meantime, I'm going to talk to you about homeschooling and how that works for working mothers and fathers who have had to drop everything in a really difficult time like COVID. With all my conversations with people over the last few months in terms of education and schooling, I've received mixed messages. And some of those have been sheer fear about how I'm going to do it. And one of the biggest ones is time management. How do we manage our day while maybe one partner's still working and you have a business that you work from home? And how do you keep that afloat right now when it's imperative that your business doesn't do a nosedive? So what are we going to do about that? One of the big things is with teaching, we as parents are natural teachers. Whether you give yourself the accolades for that or not, you are. You actually are. And you are able to teach your kids. No matter what happens, if you are presented with a situation that's difficult, then you can wing it, and we fake it until we make it. We know that our kids have been bringing home their homework for a long time. We know that they have readers, and we know roughly what's going on in their class, in their classrooms or within their schooling, and certainly know from their report cards. So what do we do about a day in the life of a homeschooling parent? And that's a bit tricky, because with homeschooling, we think that everything has to be super, super, super structured. But when you're in COVID, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be that stressful, and it doesn't have to be super, super, super structured. We need to do what we can, how we can, and when we can. I'm going to admit Jo is coming on right now, and she has been in a mad rush because she's been very, very busy this morning. And we're going to see her as soon as she turns on her radio and turns on her microphone and countdowns on. Jo, welcome to our show. How are you?
Good morning, Tracy. I'm good, thank you. I'm just going to adjust my camera here, take my glasses off because they've gone reflective on me. Good to see you this morning. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And thank you for coming on today at such short notice. We know how difficult and stressful that is for a lot of people. So we are looking forward to speaking with you today. So I have explained to my listeners that you are a psychologist, that you are a speaker, and that you are also an author. And I've talked about your book, The Elite. But today that we're talking about we're talking about homeschooling, and you have two students that you homeschool, one in year 8, so that would be 13, and one in year 12, and that would be a 16-year-old, wouldn't it?
Yes, well, actually, just a little bit older. So Dylan actually turned 14 2 days ago, so he's my grade 8er, and my grade 12er, because of the change in the prep system, he's just about to turn 18, so he's very grateful. We timed it beautifully. He turns 18 the day after his final exam. So he's very happy about that.
Oh, that's good. I bet he's very happy with that. So a 14 and 17-year-old
yes.
at the moment. So, Jo, you're a mother of a business with lots of components and elements within that business. Can you tell our listeners what it is that you do?
Sure. Well, thank you, Tracy, for that opportunity. So my background, as you said, is in psychology. So I ended up, I grew up on the Sunshine Coast. I ended up in beautiful sunny Townsville by accident. So my guidance, I think serendipity is always an interesting thing. So my guidance officer at school, when I went to see him, because originally I thought I was going to join the police force is where I thought my career was going to start. And so I'd been advised to go and study a degree at university first. That was said to me at the police academy. So off I went to school, went to the guidance officer, and He looked up the QTAC book, and fortunately for me, he misread the QTAC book. So what he told me was that for me to study psychology, I had to go to Townsville, which of course is 1,000 kilometres away from the Sunshine Coast. And what he didn't realise, and I certainly didn't know, was that I could have done degrees in Brisbane that would have got me to the same outcome. Doesn't matter anyway, because I went to Townsville, and I think that's why I'm so grateful for, and I think it is about taking opportunities when they come along, is because then I studied psychology. By the end of my degree, I'd actually forgotten about the police force, and so I'd found my love of sports psychology. And of course, being in North Queensland, there were plenty of opportunities afforded to me that I wouldn't have seen if I had been, been in the southeast, I don't think. So I worked with the Cowboys when they first started, so that your listeners who are familiar with the National Rugby League competition will know about the Cowboys. So worked with them, I've worked with the Fire, I've worked with, various national teams from Townsville. And so it's been a really nice location for me to be in, to be able to explore those opportunities.
Oh, thanks, Jo. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but you're actually beaming out across the whole universe. So you're talking to
everyone. Yes, that's why I thought if I said the Cowboys, people might think I meant the Dallas Cowboys. So, definitely the rugby league team based here in Australia. So, but for those listeners who aren't as familiar with Australian sport, so work with rugby league, which is obviously a football-based sport, work within basketball as well. But I guess it probably doesn't really matter per se from the psychological side of things, which sport it is that you're working with, but, the principles apply across sports. And what I found through my career is, because I do a lot of work in defence as well, is that the principles of sports psychology apply in lots of different environments. And that's why I often find myself in areas that I never thought I'd end up working because the principles of performance are kind of universal, I guess.
So tell me, Joan, we know that you have a foreword here on your book by the very famous Jonathan Thurston. Tell me about your relationship with Jonathan and how that came to be.
Yeah, so for those who maybe don't follow the rugby league, Jonathan played with the Cowboys. So he came to us just after his premiership with the Bulldogs and came as a young player and worked with the team. So my role in sports psychology is to support the clubs, support the teams, and then obviously to support individual athletes along the way as well. So players can opt to work with me, which obviously is kind of tied up in confidentiality and so forth. But the nice thing is that I've been able to work with lots of elite performers over the years. And so, what elite performers understand is that it's as much a mind game as it is a physical game. And so, we were able to work together, which has been great. And help to hopefully contribute in some small part towards the psychological preparation of elite sport.
That's wonderful and well worth reading your book for our listeners, and it's on Amazon. But you also have told me that you worked for the Army as well, and there's a big base in Townsville. How did that come about? How did you end up working with Army personnel?
Yeah, so that actually started quite a few years ago, but it came more from, it's interesting because my area of psychology is what's called positive psychology, which is essentially the science of what goes well. So what psychology realised around about the time I started as an undergrad is that we'd spent a lot of time focusing on what happens for people when life gets tricky, when people have various psychological conditions and so forth, and we hadn't paid a lot of attention to what happens when life goes well. Hadn't paid a lot of attention to leadership, to thriving, to all the areas that you cover in your work, Tracy, is very much a domain that's very much in parallel with positive psychology. And so much of my early work in defence was actually supporting people who had been injured or were facing various challenges, which of course is incredibly important work. What happened then about, I want to say it was about 5 years ago, was I met a major involved with the Army who had inherited a centre that at that time was for soldiers who were returning to work, and particularly for soldiers who had incurred some sort of workplace injury. So probably not the injuries that we might expect, as in have been serving overseas and experienced trauma or the physical challenges that might go with that. This was more for those who had strained their back at work or had some, you know, those kinds of injuries that we see across workplaces, but obviously precludes soldiers from being able to do their normal day-to-day duties. So there was a centre there, and the focus of that centre changed as well from focusing on a soldier with an injury and how we manage that to how can we enhance the well-being of it, the overall well-being of the soldier, to help them to recover better. And that, I guess that parallel was there because my PhD actually looked at the psychological predictors of injury in elite rugby league. So again, there's lots of parallels there because obviously our soldiers are very much familiar with the elite performance environment. And then they were keen then to get some programs up and running. So what they've developed now, and we've just firmed up the dates yesterday for the next program. So I think it's about program number 20 we're about to run. It's a 6-week program for soldiers who are dealing with some sort of physical or psychological injury incurred in the workplace. And what we're doing is it within that 6 weeks, that it's a full-time program. It's mm-hmm. amazing. I can't think of any other workforce in Australia that offers something like this. So they're with us for 6 weeks, full-time. They spend about 20 hours with me across the 6 weeks looking at all the things from positive psychology. So mindset, emotional intelligence, systems in place, learning how to embrace the suck when you're doing a PT session that's particularly tough, you know, all that sort of stuff. But with that, there's also a huge nutrition component. They spend a lot of time in the gym learning good technique, the importance of recovery. They do yoga. They do, you know, all sorts of things. And, you know, it's a full week for 6 weeks. So teaches them a whole range of skills. And I guess it really gives them an opportunity to focus on themselves and to look at and to determine what well-being looks like for them. So what we're hopefully doing is helping to equip these soldiers with better resources. And I know it's very well received by the soldiers. Army are very appreciative of the work that's happening, and there's lots of stuff happening in the well-being space within defence. And then I guess it's kind of a bit like a stone in a pond, it ripples out. So also helping support soldiers who are transitioning out of defence, because of course that's incredibly important as well. So that's a different program, but we want to make sure that those who've served our country are supported in their time of transitioning out, because as you know, any change, whether it's a welcome change or an unwelcome change, can be disruptive for us. So learning some skills around that. And then I get to work in some other areas within defence. So with new officers who are coming through, I've just worked with one of the other elite units just recently, working on some of their mental skills through things, delivering sports psychology techniques. So all sorts of stuff. It's a lot of fun. I know that was a very long answer, Tracy, because I get excited about it. It's a really interesting line of work.
As you should be excited about, because it is time, isn't it, that we as organisations listen to what you have and take that on board and help our employees, whether they are in the shop down the road or whether they are in big corporate organisations or in the armed forces. It's absolutely imperative to not only look after their elite performance environment and their mindset whilst they're in the organisation, but also post-organisation. I follow on LinkedIn, I follow a lot of groups, armed forces groups, and my interest is, as you know, my father was in the Air Force, so I have that upbringing and huge pride for it. And I am always interested in seeing how, so the US Army, for example, steps up and all the creative things they're doing now, especially with an older workforce, and around the mindset is a big one. And I looked at the data the other day in America, and I was quite shocked at the data of the number of suicides per day in America. And I also follow a very big group over in America with the British Bulldogs, who are service dogs, post-service dogs for people. And they have a massive group over there, which is quite exciting at what these people will do to help their fellow ex-service men and women. And that's wonderful. What you were talking about earlier was your elite performance environment. For our listeners, can you just explain a bit more around that?
Yeah, so I think... one of the ways of thinking about it, in some ways, I think we're all performers. You know, we all have, for those of us who who maybe walk into a job each day, for those of us who have to front up in front of our children each day, you know, it can feel like life can be a little bit of a performance. And what we know is that there are elements that help to contribute towards reaching our goals and that functioning well. And it's not always about winning. It can be, you know, I work with a lot of people that like to win. And that's kind of inevitable when you're working in elite sport. If they don't have the goal of winning, then you kind of look at it and go, oh, well, that's interesting. It doesn't help if it's the only goal, because, you know, obviously we can't always control who turns up or what happens there. But, any elite performer I've ever worked with wants a shiny bit of gold around their neck when they stand on the dais at the end of it. So it can be about that. But it's also about, you know, getting to the end of something and reflecting on it and thinking, you know, did I achieve what I wanted to achieve here? Did I approach it the way I wanted to? Do I feel good about myself and how I conducted myself through that? So there's a lot that we look at in terms of the performance mindset, if you like, about, you know, what are some of the things that contribute to performing well. And you know, I'm not sure which way we want to go with some of this discussion, and I know we had some other focus for today as well, but, you know, if I touch on a couple of topics and then it might be relevant for later in the conversation. But, you know, one of the fundamental things that helps performers to perform well, and it's probably the least exciting thing to talk about, but it's about habits. It's about creating strong, reliable habits. And the reason for that is, as humans, we've got so much going on in our brains on any given day. You know, it's 30 to 40,000 decisions we make every day. And the expectation is that it sits somewhere around 40% of what we do every day is habit. And what I always say, no matter who the audience, is that habits are great because they save us from having to think. And habits are terrible because they save us from having to think, you know. So I like to kind of put habits into one of two kind of lenses, I guess, if you like. And that is, do you have a habit that is helpful for you and is going to move you towards your goal? Or do you have a habit that's unhelpful and is going to prevent you or get in the way, present some sort of roadblock to getting what you want? And I guess if I'd ask your listeners just to be mindful, pay attention to how I just described that then. I just said, are your habits helpful or unhelpful? I didn't say, are they good or are they bad? Because the other thing that goes with it is, if we have a bad habit, and people often talk about their bad habits, there's a whole load of self-talk that follows on from that. So if I say that my bad habit is that I get online every day and spend a big bucket of money on online shopping, say, it'd be nice if I did, I don't, but it'd be nice if I did. But, you know, and if I look at that and go, oh, that's such a bad habit for me to have, then there's a whole heap of judgment, negative emotion that goes with that, the most, you know, unhelpful emotion that you can generate for yourself is guilt, you know, because then you just feel bad. And then you end up with this cycle and you end up perpetuating it and it continues. Whereas if you go, well, look, you know, I've got some habits for me that are helpful. I get up early in the morning and I do exercise. That's helpful. That works for me. But maybe I'm also prone to binge watching movies on Netflix till too late at night. Yeah, probably not so helpful, because remember I just said I'm getting up early and exercising. So it's really about kind of looking at our habits, looking at the way we choose, but recognizing too that it becomes automated. So if we don't pay attention to our habits every now and again, if we don't think about what habits are going to move us towards our goals, then we'll just continue doing it the way we have been. And, you know, are you getting what you want? That's the question you can ask yourself. And could you tweak your habit just a little bit to move you further forward?
And the narrative, the element that you're talking about, that really powerful element, is the narrative, isn't it? And so I would suspect that you would teach how to flip that and flip the narrative so it's always powerful, that it's focused on achieving, it's focused on a success, it's focused on action and doing as well. So lots of great advice there for our listeners, Jo. When you first came into the COVID arena with all of us worldwide, you're a mum of two, as we spoke about, and you were found yourself in the situation that you were homeschooling. So keeping in abreast of the habits that you'd have to have formed with that quick flip in terms of homeschooling at home plus trying to keep your business afloat would have been quite tricky. So tell me, how long were you actually homeschooling for this year?
It was a while, not as many as so many people in Australia, and my heart goes out to those who are still homeschooling at the moment. So I'm based in Queensland in Australia, and so our restrictions were not what it has been for many. But certainly, like you said, I pick up on that point about it was just quick, wasn't it? You know, we got up Sunday morning thinking we were heading to work that week, and then we listened to our Prime Minister that night, and we weren't, and everything stopped. And interestingly, like you said, none of this happens in isolation. So, and I won't dwell too much on what happened with my business, other than my calendar emptied. Most of my work at that point in time was presentations. So I had an army program to deliver. I did lots of work in schools in our region, supporting teachers, and so that all just went. So there was nothing in my diary, which kind of, the upside of that, it gave me plenty of time to kind of sort out what was happening at home, but then it was also dealing with what was happening in my business as well. And of course, as was for everyone, and we all dealt with it in our own way, there was the grief that came with loss. You know, we all experience loss. And so, you know, I say to people, you know, I know Kubler-Ross had these, you know, five set stages of how we go through grief, and she never intended it to be read that way, although that's, you know, textbooks like to put things in logical stages, and I always say I think grief's just like a big bowl of spaghetti, know, and we move through it. So for my sons, they're at a school, and incredibly they're at a school that I can actually hear the bell from my kitchen window. We're very close to the school, and the bell kept going all the way through the time that we were shut down, which was kind of helpful because both of my boys were set up on laptops at home working through it. And obviously I have a grade 12er. So that was, I guess, where I had a particular level of concern about how that was going to go. And what happened very quickly is the school responded really quickly. Their communication was great. The teachers were, heaven only knows what the teachers went through to get all of that ready. So it was interesting that we did, as you said, we had to revisit our habits because, you know, it would have been very easy to just spend 24/7 in our pajamas and, you know, eat breakfast in bed and flick on the laptop and all that sort of stuff. So we talked about that. We talked about the routines that we wanted to put in place. Some of them were idealistic. I got this whiteboard out that worked for the first week, and then we tossed the whiteboard after that because, you know, we weren't quite going to bake our own bread every day and things like that that we thought we were going to do. So we just kind of had to work out what our new normal was going to be through that time. We needed to work out the routine. My eldest child being in grade 12, we always knew how important the social connections are in that grade 12 year, that transition year. The schooling side of it was managed beautifully by the school. It was the social connection that was tricky. It was them keeping in touch. So I would go into his room and he would be wearing his school jersey. They didn't have to wear their jersey, but he just said, I need to wear this, Mum, because it's so, it really emphasized the importance of people, the importance of community, the importance of the school community. And so we were fortunate that we have a school, the school my children attend is well-resourced. The communication was great. So no concerns at all from an academic point of view. It was just managing some of those social aspects of it. And just how we could do that and talking about that too, because there was obviously a grief for them as well about what they were missing out on and so forth.
And it's fascinating what you're saying, because the human nature is to connect. And we know that if we take away that social connection, no matter what we put in place, there is going to be a reaction. And then you put in a year 12 student, and for our listeners overseas, year 12 in Australia is the final school year before students move on in their lives, whether it be an academic career that they're seeking through university or study, or whether they're going into trades such as apprenticeships, etc., or most of them like to think about and dream about travelling overseas. So all those things stop. So from our senior students' point of view, it was phenomenal. And they were very fortunate they had someone like you teaching them and supervising and helping them through that. But then on the other hand, your mum. And for some kids, that can also be, oh, you know, I just want to be me and have that bit of separation from our parents. So there's all sorts of reactions, obviously, with COVID. Now, we know that we're really fortunate in Queensland because we're not homeschooling at the moment, whereas in Victoria, they are still homeschooling since March and struggling big time with that. But we talked about the homeschooling for two, our senior students. So what's a normal day like for you, Joe? What was a normal day like for you teaching two high school kids and one, you know, at the grade eight, at the entrance to high school to grade 12?
Yeah, so it was, so as I said, routine was important, and we were fortunate through all of that time that we were still allowed to exercise and exercise away from our home. So, and we are a family of exercisers. So it meant that they missed out on their team sports. Obviously, that all shut down. That's why I've got this background today, because we're actually on the Sunshine Coast at the touch football at the moment. So they're both off at that. They're both up at that this morning. I just watched the youngest ref a game on the live stream, so that was great. Because they don't want us down there because they want to try and limit, which is totally fine. So the morning would start for me and my husband. It would start. We would normally exercise first thing in the morning, and so that didn't change. So we would do that, come back, and then my husband's business, where he has a financial services business, and he employs about 60, 70 staff. Their office is big, which actually meant that they could keep their business open and staff could attend as well. So that really helped with that kind of routine and normality for them. And then with the boys and I being at home, we would then, you know, we would be touching base with them and making sure they were doing some sort of physical activity. We are in Queensland. I'm feeling very, very blessed as I recount this story, because we have a pool and it was still warm enough to swim in the pool, so they could get outside. We've got a basketball hoop at home and so forth. And what was really good is the school really engaged with, so the PE department set challenges. They did push-up challenges, and you had to wear your house colours and send your videos in. And they still did. My son has a leadership position, so they were still running school assemblies, and they were just trying. And I guess we talked about creativity and you know, this is our chance to do things differently and to think, you know, to work out what our assumptions are and then to work around those. So, and then it would be all the usual kind of, you know, the household chores, those sorts of things. The boys would, you know, we look for the upside too. We really don't love lunch boxes in our household, so we didn't have to do lunch boxes, so that was quite nice, although they just about ate me out of house and home. They were getting used to home cooked meals at lunchtime, so that was I don't know quite how that happened. So we just worked with that routine, and fortunately with the schools, there was some learning that was like module stuff, some things that were live with the teacher. The beauty of it is that whilst I was supervising them being at school at home, I didn't feel like I had to step into that teaching role, particularly with my grade 12. Thank heavens, because he does physics and chemistry and all sorts of subjects that I didn't even do them at school. So heaven help me if he needed my help. But probably spent a bit more time with my grade 8er, who, you know, they're still learning all the mechanics of being organised at school and getting things done. So there was more conversations about what was happening and, you know, conversations out at the washing line and those sorts of things. So we just tried to include it, but then also to separate out, you know, like, so as I said, the beauty for us, we could hear the school bell. So when the school bell went at 3:20 and school was over, I'd come and go, right, boys, school's over for the afternoon, let's have some afternoon tea, get outside for a bit, you know, that sort of stuff. So we just tried to create a new routine around that.
I love what you're saying, and I can picture it all too. The beauty of telling stories, obviously, is we think in pictures, and For so many, when we have what we perceive as a stressor, like a change in a whole lifestyle, a change in our future, we don't know what's going to happen. We can also flip it, and I'm a big believer of flipping everything, flip it and think about what of our kids currently, what benefits have they had with COVID? And I'm hearing a few there that you're talking about in terms of leadership. So they're stepping up, doing different things, thinking differently, observing what happens in a major world change. So they're part of that. But the other great thing is that they have the ability to grow in their resilience. And I can imagine in your household, that would have been a gold nugget for your kids in terms of the stepping up in the leadership and growing their resilience.
Yeah, I would totally agree, Tracy. And we were very mindful to have those conversations as well, that what we tried to do was to balance those moments where they would say, this isn't fair, this sucks, mm. this, you know, all these things, because, you know, mm. I mean, yeah, it's not fair. You know, none of us wanted this. This is something unwanted that's happened to all of us. Yeah. So being very mindful not to disregard that when that was being said. So say, yeah, mate, you're right. I agree with you. Like, I'm not, mm. you know, I don't like this either. You're right to be disappointed. So normalizing that grief response, but then also saying, and I'm like you, that the messaging I've always had in my career is, you can't control what happens to you, but you can control your reaction to it. And that's really your opportunity. It's totally okay to have a moment of, oh, that was, you know, and then pick yourself back up and dust yourself off and go, so this is what it is. So what am I going to do now? You know, and how can I bounce back? How can I bounce forward perhaps from this? What have I learned about myself? What's been the upside of it? You know, so, and I think, I did a presentation here in Townsville is the city that I'm in, and the regional centres, and I don't want to speak too generally because I don't want to speak on behalf of anybody, but I know that there's many businesses and industries in regional centres that have actually come through and grown. And notice how carefully I'm, I don't know if you can notice the change in my physicality as I'm trying to say it, because I'm trying to be careful, because there's people who've done well through this.
I hear you.
Like survivor guilt. It's almost, and we talked about that in this forum, that there's businesses that have grown and thrived through this, that in our region, you know, a friend of mine was saying to me the other day, she put a house on the market on, I don't know, 3 days ago, it sold and no one quibbled the price. Like, so there's things happening, as you said, there's growth and opportunity that's come from this, whilst there's also been incredible pain and hurt. And of course, the other thing I'm very mindful of in our community is we haven't been touched by the virus like other communities have as well. So I'm being very respectful that our experience, we have been very fortunate in these unfortunate times, I think. But I do think that it's important for us to go, well, you know, and that's what I've said to my grade 12, but he's got a speech coming up at the end of the year he's going to have to give reflecting on the grade 12 year. And I said, yeah, and I think they call themselves the quarantines. I think that's what the grade 12s call themselves. But the other thing I've said, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, you know, this is terrible what's happened to the grade 12s. And sure, it's not what we wanted. But also remember, our grade 12s don't know any different. This is their first and only grade 12 year. And so, you know, their friendships are probably stronger. The learnings that they've had, like you said, their resilience is going to be so well developed through this, and so, you know, they'll be stronger for having gone through really, really tough times.
I love what you're saying there, and because I believe that the kids are very flexible and kids have the ability to bounce back way faster than adults, and I don't believe it can be too detrimental in terms of, and I'm talking about a year 12 student here, for example, that what will happen to me when I apply for university. And we know that no matter what, our systems, both the university systems and the schooling systems, put in place the cogs in the organisation to get in sync with that and work with it. Because it's different times. So whilst a student might not have achieved X, Y, and Z, at some point they can still demonstrate that they're able to transfer their skills and their knowledge across to a university degree, entrance to a degree. My nephew is finishing engineering, in chemical engineering in university this year. And his big panic came when all the businesses shut down and he couldn't do his final prac. And it was real. It was quite frightening for him. And there was no communication with the university and he was getting quite stressed. I was organising stuff here for him and we were trying to move quite quickly to ensure there was a seamless step. But in the end, he figured it all out himself and he did a marvellous job to do it. And it wasn't easy. And he was doing three jobs as well. So, you know, it does help our kids build their resilience. And then they demonstrate that and role model for all the other children. So your grade eight son will be watching all this happening. And I bet he had immense pride at being so close in proximity to your eldest as he was developing and getting ready to move into that new world for him. So what were some of the key takeaways that you noticed your eldest, his growth, that you think specifically might have been related to this lifting of resilience and leadership?
Yeah, I think it accelerated their maturity through this time as well. And I think what it also did, look, I know a big focus for them, and this is probably particularly the case for Queensland-based students, is that we're also moving to the new system of external exams, which has never been done before either. So it's kind of had everything thrown at them. And I'm also in a region that flooded last year as well. So, you know, we kind of had everything happening all at once. But I do think it's that finding ways to connect, the resourcefulness of the kids, of the young people, I think has been really apparent through these times as well, but also the need to care and the need for empathy. And I think the other thing that this time has done has put a spotlight on having conversations. I know we've just recently had Are You Okay Day, but I think looking at well-being for people, and I guess having seen that in various ways, you know, like if we come back to the work that I do in elite sport, so within rugby league, the players have been in what they call a bubble and they can't leave that bubble. And so knowing how important well-being is through that space, how important connections are with people, you know, has all been incredibly important. And as we move forward, I know the women's basketball is the next national competition to start up again, and they're looking at creative ways of making that happen. And so I think it's just, you know, finding those opportunities and I guess as a family, we were talking about things that conversations we never would have had, you know. Yeah. So that's another thing that's come about for us as a family and having gone through this. And there's no doubt, you know, we've talked to the boys about, you know, you're part of history here. Mm-hmm. And we're, of course, we're all part of history all the time. But, you know, this is a definite marker in history, isn't it?
It is.
And I think it's been interesting. We've watched a few of the documentaries on, you know, what happened with the Spanish flu, and there was a really interesting one that we saw recently. I think it was ABC or someone had done it, and it was like what we're going through now, but, you know, 100 years ago. But all the issues, people don't change, and I think it's made us reflect on humans and social connection and gratitude and all those things that are so incredibly important for us moving forward in these times.
And they're great words of advice too that I'm hearing you saying. And I can understand that, you know, you and I are very fortunate to be in Queensland, where we really haven't been that touched compared to, say, in Victoria. That in Melbourne, my daughter's in Victoria and she's in lockdown, obviously, and she lost her job very early in the piece, and then she was able to get it back, and then again. But she has managed that really well and recently got engaged, and that was quite a bit of a getting engaged in COVID. But it went very smoothly because of their attitude, and they had a really good attitude. So they both run every day, and they do things to ensure that they're coping well. And her partner's studying his PhD at the moment for engineering, robotic engineering. So he's been busy doing the virtual tutoring, etc. But coming back to what you're saying in terms of helping students, I know that you are writing a new book. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I am, Tracy. Thank you for making mention. So I do have a new book coming out. I actually, just before this call, press the green light on getting the first print through, and then it'll go to bulk print soon. So it's what I found through the work that I've done, obviously a lot of it has been in sports scenarios. And what I find is my overwhelming conclusion is that parents have the absolute best intentions for their kids, particularly through sporting experiences. So I come from that assumption. But what I've also found is that parents also have lots of questions, lots of wonderings, sometimes some anxieties around what am I doing? How am I helping? Am I doing too much? Am I not doing enough? Am I ruining things? What can I do? What do I do about that parent who's saying this? You know, my child's going into rep and how... So there seems to be lots of requests for information. So what I thought was, I thought there's a bits of advice and information and what we know from the research that I seem to find myself sharing often. And I thought, right, what's the best way to sort of condense this? So I've put together a new book that's coming out that's designed as being a companion for parents. I've called it In the Grandstands because I think that's where that for me is where I think most of us sit when we're, regardless of the sport, because I really did have to think about that, because I thought, now what would a swimming parent recognise? What would a football parent recognise? What would hockey, or what would someone who's down at the track? So In the Grandstands seem to hopefully fit for most parents. And so it's, the tagline for it is champion your teen through the tears and triumphs of sport. So it's, I put it together as some, just in very small sections, because the other thing I know is that parents on the run don't necessarily have time to kind of wolf down a whole book or read a whole chapter, but you might have a moment where you're sitting in the car waiting. I know my youngest plays basketball, so we're not allowed in the stadium when they go to practice, so I spend a lot of time in the car park because it's quite away from our house. So what I think is convenient for parents is just having a couple of pages on something, an idea or a topic that they can look at. So that's where the book's kind of, that's where it came from. And so what it has within it is there are 12 chapters like you would normally find in a book, but within each one there's little subsections about the common questions that I'm asked by parents in how to best support your teen, whether they've gone through a disappointment, whether they're doing well, whether they say, you know what, I'm not doing this sport anymore. Like, what do you do then? You know, all those kinds of places that we find ourselves, but also a couple of other things for the parents as well, because, you know, who we are as people, who what our sporting experiences was, of course, influences the lens over our child's sporting experience. So there's a little chapter in there, you know, challenging all of us to look at ourselves. And I was very, very mindful in writing it that it needed to be a book of generosity. It needed to understand that parents are doing the best they can, but sometimes don't always have the answers. And so what it offers is what I know based on the research. And I certainly don't put myself out there at a personal level as the expert in this, because I don't think anybody is. So I do share some of my own, there was one moment that I share in the book, and I did actually go under my desk and sat there for a little bit while I thought about it and went, do I really want to share this? Because gee, I stuffed up that day, you know? So it's recognizing the humanness that it is to be a parent.
I love what you said there. I really, when I first heard about your book, pardon me, and the topic you're writing about, I immediately thought, oh, I wish I'd had that book when I was going through it all. I really did, because it's everything that you said, and I can imagine every single parent, every single person, whether you're a parent or not, or an auntie, or an uncle, grandparent, feeling this anxiety. It is a bit of, what do you do? If you cross the line, are you doing enough? Are you not doing enough? And it is. It's uncharted territory. So it's a dynamic topic that you're writing in, and one I haven't seen any books around, and I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thank you, Tracy. You're right. When I did the background research, I thought, oh, maybe I don't need to write this book. Maybe there's one out there that I can say to people, just go and read this. But there wasn't something written in that kind of style where you can just pick something up and have a bit of a read. And the other thing that, as you mentioned, I had Jonathan write the foreword for The Elite. I was really fortunate for this book that I had the foreword's been written by another amazing Australian athlete, who's Susie Bakovich. And Susie obviously is three times Olympian and played for the Opals, played overseas, and she was the captain of the Fire, which of course is our team based in Townsville.
Yes.
And Susie, sitting with Susie while she wrote the foreword and having a conversation with her, because of course she is a tough competitor, a high level performer, and has the most beautiful relationship with her mother and she did with her father too. Sadly, her father has passed away, but she talks about their support from the grandstands. But what's really interesting is Susie is also the mum of 2 1-year-old twins. They turned one last so it was really it you know, she was able to talk in the foreword not only about her own experiences as an elite athlete, but also her hopes and aspirations for her daughters, that they find, and it's all the stuff you'd expect. I want them to enjoy their sport. I want them to love it. And there's a whole chapter in the book on the importance of fun, you know, and I say fun is serious business, because it is. It's really that key thing that really keeps us engaged with, you know, with sport. I'm always saying to parents, you know, sport is the optional extra. You know, we all need to do physical activity, but playing sport is, it's kind of like sports is the toy store of life. You know, you don't have to do sport. So you're only going to do it if you love it. So, you know, we need to find ways to help children to embrace what's fun, but also try and understand what that is. There was a great study done a couple of years ago that looked at when kids say sport's fun, which kids often do, you know, it's the number one reason why they leave sport is because they say it's not fun. But what do they actually mean when they say that? And there's actually 15 different types of fun, according to kids. So we explore a bit of that in the book as well.
Lovely. And it's interesting. I was listening to a TED Talk with Dr. Ken Robinson a few weeks ago, and he was talking about Death Valley in terms of education, because they haven't lifted the priority and recognition of creativity, the arts, and sport. And I'm hearing you, and sport to me is an equally important element to the academics, and that is a big problem, I believe, for us in our schools, because we aren't probably pushing it as much as we should be, and we're letting kids fall through the cracks very, very early. I never ceased to amaze me how many kids couldn't swim in high school as a principal, and it really concerned me, because we're in Queensland, and I was a Royal Life Saving Society instructor for years and years and years, and travelled all over Australia teaching, and I found a totally different aspect in Western Australia in terms of children swimming to Queensland. And why was that? And it really is about taking on board that imperative need for sports. And I love what you're saying about your book, and I can't wait to interview you in terms of that book. And are you pre-selling yet?
Well, it's on my website, but I haven't promoted that as yet. But yeah. I mean, if anyone felt so inclined, it will be there. But the plan is that I'm going to start the pre-sales in the next week or two.
Right.
And then... So I actually greenlighted, and you know the process, Tracy, with your book that you've written. So I've just approved this morning. It's just gone to the first print. So I'll get to have it in my hands to have a look at it, just to make sure everything's right. It came back from the editor this morning. And then I think it's probably going to be about 2 or 3 weeks. And then hopefully I'll have my set of books that I'll use with teams and with schools. So I always have a couple of boxes sitting in the garage of my books that I use within workshops, but then, like you said, all the usual channels, so you can either get it through me and at the moment there's a cheaper price on it anyway, just to thank people for their patience while they wait for it. So if anyone wanted to have a look, it's there, but otherwise it'll be on all the usual flavors of booksellers that we have around the world now. It's very easy to get hold of a book, which is great.
Sorry to interrupt, we are running out of time. Your website, if people want to jump on board and have a look at your website now, can you please let us know what that is?
Sure, Tracy, thank you. So if you remember my name, you'll find me anywhere. Dr. Jo Lukins, drjolukins.com.
Okay, and I will put that up on my website as well. So ladies and gentlemen, young girls and boys, whoever is listening to us today, thank you so much for coming on board, Jo. I love listening to you talk, and I really am looking forward to us speaking again, heading to Townsville in November, and I'm staying there for a few days, so I'm hoping I can catch up with you after your graduation. Yeah, that'd be good. To all our listeners today, thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks. And thank you to Joe. You will be able to find a lot of information on my website, www.tracytully.com. And if you want to join my Facebook or LinkedIn, you'll find me under Tracy Tully, no E's anywhere. Likewise, Joe Lukens, Dr. Joe Lukens. Thank you so much, Joe, for coming. And all the best for the next week. And I look forward to hearing you next Thursday morning at 10 a.m. AEST time with BBS Radio. Thank you so much. Cheers. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.